It's time for school. Rock School. With your hosts, Dr. Joe Burns.
Me, it's all about me.
And Chad P.
You try wearing the stuff Steven Tyler wears and see if they don't commit you.
Looks like a harlequin.
Class is in.
Good afternoon, folks. It's Rock School, and this, a very special Rock School, at least to the man sitting immediately next to me.
But first,
me, it's all about me. My name is Joe Burns. I am a professor here in the Communication Department, Southeastern Louisiana University, right where we're broadcasting from. Guy sitting next to me, very special show to him. Who are you?
Chad P.
Now, not too long ago, probably 6 months ago, we did a Van Halen show.
That's right.
Because it's my favorite group, bar
Correct.
None. You have been asking incessantly
yes.
since that point, when are we going to do my favorite group? Well, now.
Okay.
Now is when we're going to do it. Who's your favorite group?
Aerosmith,
the highest selling band in the United States. 150 million albums worldwide, 67 million of those right here in the United States alone. They hold the record for the most gold and platinum albums period.
That they do.
They've had 41 charted singles, and it's my opinion that bassist Tom Hamilton has the greatest line at the induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ever.
What'd he say?
When they were put in 2001, he looked dead out to the audience and he said, "Mother, I swear I'll go back to college once I get this silly rock band thing out of my system."
Sweet.
I thought that was the greatest in the world when
nice.
He stated that. Aerosmith for two shows. And the reason we're going to do it for two shows is because
we got to.
This is two bands.
Yeah.
This band was the biggest thing in the United States for many, many years, and then they imploded. They absolutely fell apart.
Yep.
Should have gone their separate ways, should have been the subject of a VH1 Where Are They Now? But they didn't.
Nope.
They came back together. Geffen Records brought them back together. And they, against every odd that should have been, became twice the biggest rock band ever. So in show number one, we're going to go all the way up until the explosion that tore them apart. In show number two, we're going to bring them back together. And then we're going to take them up to present day. Fair enough?
We got 2 hours to cover 38 years.
And we're going to do it.
All right.
And we're going to do it.
All right.
We begin before we ever get to the first album.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what is tattooed on Steven Tyler? And by the way,
what?
By contractual agreement,
okay.
All read their writer. It's up on thesmokinggun.com. By
that?
Contractual agreement, all personnel must call Steven Tyler Steven.
Really?
Can't call him Steve. Can't call him Steve-O. You must call him Steven.
Okay.
Do you know what's tattooed on his right arm?
A heart, huh?
A heart, but it says something over the heart.
Can't help
Do you know me. What it says?
No.
Makin.
Makin.
M-A-K-I-N.
Okay.
And on their first album, they have a song called Mama Kin.
Correct.
Now, do you have any idea what Makin or Mama Kin is?
Was it a reference to a relative?
No, not at all. It has nothing to do with his mother. Steven Tyler believes that what allows him to become the musician that he is,
mm-hmm.
and I think all musicians believe this, there's a creative force.
Okay.
Some people think it's spiritual, God.
Mm-hmm.
Some people think it's the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Some people think it's within them. I think Steven Tyler believes it's this just unmentionable thing that's all around us, and he calls it something. It is his creative spiritual force, and he refers to it as Makin, and
okay.
he wrote a song dedicated to it. It was on the first album, Aerosmith, Mama Kin, on Rock School.
We'll be right back.
like him, does it?
No, it doesn't. He became known as the Demon of Screaming.
Well, he doesn't have all those nodules on his throat yet. Welcome to Rock School, folks, as we start the first of two shows dedicated to Aerosmith, the highest-selling band in the United States. And by the way, the band will vehemently deny that they named themselves after the Aerosmith book by Sinclair Lewis. They did not do that. They said that's a book you're forced to read in high school. We just thought Aerosmith, A-E-R-O Smith, sounded cool, not the Sinclair Lewis A-R-R-O-W Smith. We did not name ourselves after that.
It's Joey Kramer, the drummer, that came up with the name, correct?
That's right.
And he was influenced from the group called The Hookers and Spike Jones.
Good for you. Good for you.
I did my homework
on
this one.
That's right, you did. Let's go back in history. Okay. Where did they come from? Steven Tyler was a local hero in New Hampshire. Do you know the name of the vacation town where Steven Tyler met up with all of these people?
Sunapee.
Good for you. Good for you. Steven Tyler was in a series of bands in Yonkers, New York. The big one was called Vic Tallarico Orchestra. He was also in Chain Reaction, Fox Chase, and William Proud. I know I rattle those off like I know them, but I did look them up. He went up to New Hampshire where he was asked to go hear a band that was made up of Tom Hamilton, Joe Perry, and David Scott, the original drummer. The band was called The Jam.
The Jam.
And according to Steven Tyler, he was out of the band by then. Again, he was a hero at this point in time. He'd already been in bands and he had already put out a record, and it of course flopped, but the fact remains, you know, wow, this guy has been in bands, he's put out a record. He went to hear them, and according to the autobiography Walk This Way, and this is where I'm getting a lot of this information, and by the way, you say you don't have it yet?
No.
I will give it off to you. I've read it,
you.
And I just, it's great. The thing is, he went to hear them and it was a whole lot of, you know, speed.
Yep.
He was ready to leave. Steven Tyler was ready to leave.
He heard enough.
He was walking out, and they began to play Rattlesnake Shake. I can do something with this band, he said. I can take my classical piano influence, even though he's a drummer, and I can mold this band. And he said, okay, I want to join. And the guy said, wait, we would love to have a better drummer.
He didn't want to play drums.
No, he said, the only way I will join this band is if I'm allowed to be
the lead man
and the guy out front. We're going to continue moving through the albums through this. We'll come back and tell you how the remainder of the people got into the band and how they became the lineup you know today. But we got to play music on this show. It is a radio show, after all. One more from the debut album, Dream On.
Wow.
How many rock songs are in F minor? Not many. Dream On, Rock School. I love a gong.
A big gong.
Gotta have a gong. Gotta have a gong. I gotta tell you what, even today, even though that was their first album all the way back in 1973, and every guitarist worth his or her salt can play that, that is still a difficult piece to play on the
guitar.
That's
what you were telling me, because it's
really
in some kind of awkward...
It's in F minor.
It
was played on the piano, and it was written on the piano, so the guitar had to make itself, you know, set into a piano key, and the piano it's easier to play. F minor is difficult on a guitar, but even all of the strange... You know, ding, 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 with that walking bass line and all those beautiful neoclassical riffs that he does.
Yeah.
And there's a little tuning problem when it was recorded. And a lot of guitarists try to go one fret below where the actual fretting is done and stretch it. And It's difficult to play. It's really very good. I mean, Joe Perry is really very good.
He is.
We got to move forward.
Yeah, we're 16 minutes in. We don't even have the full lineup.
We got to move forward.
Let's go.
The band now is made up of Tom Hamilton, Joe Perry, David Scott, and somebody you may have heard of, Steven Tyler.
Yeah.
They moved to Boston to make it because somebody may very well be saying, "No, wait a minute, this is the band from Boston? You've got them up in Sunapee, New Hampshire. What
That's
are you
right.
doing?
Well, we're doing our homework."
Scott was immediately replaced, almost immediately, by Berklee College of Music student Joey Kramer, who quits.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Hi, Mom, Dad. Yeah. How are things going at college? I'm quitting the Berklee College of Music.
To go be in a band.
To go be in a band.
Now, Joey Kramer and Steven Tyler were buds. Right.
Right. Okay. So he sees this band as something that's going to happen. Kramer comes in. Kramer suggests the name. They are now Aerosmith.
That's right.
They are a foursome. A rhythm guitarist immediately joins them. His name is Ray Tabano.
Mm-hmm.
He's a friend of Tyler as well.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is Ray Tabano was a complete jerk. Apparently,
yeah.
He also did a whole lot of, well, dope, and just wasn't beneficial to the band. He split. A friend that was a known associate of Joey Kramer, who just graduated from Berklee.
Yep.
His name was Brad Whitford, comes in.
And there you
ta-da,
have your
five-person lineup. Let's move forward one album. We're in 1974. The album is called Get Your Wings. This is the first one that I owned by Aerosmith. Joe Perry steps forward and is for the first time seen as the riff master.
Three times platinum.
Honest to goodness, Get Your Wings. It's the same old song and dance on Rock School. Same old story, same old song and dance. There you go.
And I never get tired of hearing it.
Get Your Wings from 1974. We got to take a break, a 1 minute pause for the cause. When we get back, we're going to move forward 1 year to 1975. We're all nuts. We got Toys in the Attic, and Clive Davis walks through the doors at Max's Kansas City and signs the band, Aerosmith, for two shows right here on Rock School. This is Rock School as we talk about Aerosmith. It's Chad P's favorite. He just said to me, look, if you get your Aerosmith show for two, I get my, or if you get your Van Halen show for two, I get my Aerosmith show for two. So we've moved through two albums, their debut Aerosmith and their second one, Get Your Wings. Here comes their third one. Their first two albums got a lot of radio airplay, but they were still generally, you know, a band. Most people think Dream On. Boom! You know, boom, they went national. Believe it or not Dream
really.
On was not a national hit until Toys in the Attic exploded.
Well,
Dream On was
re-released. I was
right,
just fixing to say that.
And
yes.
Shot to number six. It wasn't until 1975 when Toys in the Attic was released that the band exploded. That's the one that had Walk This Way on it that shot up to the top 10, which allowed them to then re-release Dream On.
Yep.
Well, let's get them signed. They're that band from Boston, so obviously they were signed in Boston. No, not at all. They were signed at Max's Kansas City Club in New York City. Now, if you remember from our punk show, Max's Kansas City was a place where Sire Records was signing all of these punk groups, or what they called new wave groups. But rock was also being played at this club. And that's where this guy, Clive Davis, was going, looking for the next big thing. Wandered in because he heard about this rock band, this five-piece rock band, saw him and said, boys, you're going to be huge. Signed him for a then unheard of amount in advance of $125,000. And he wasn't dumb. He made all of his money back. So that's how they actually got their Columbia recording contract. We're up to 1975 right now. Toys in the Attic. I know I could play Walk This Way, but haven't you heard that a million times?
I mean, in one.
Nah. Let's hear the title track, Toys in the Attic, Rock School. Boys in the Attic on Rock School. Aerosmith. Wow, good stuff. 1975. And I'm telling you what, get a hold of that album. Look for another song that never got radio airplay, but you will really like it, called Uncle Salty.
Uncle
Absolutely
Salty.
Good stuff right here on Rock School. You had a certain question for me.
I do. I mean, it's a simple question, but I just want to know, why Aerosmith? I mean, I've looked at all these different bands, and just about every biography that I read, each band says, well, yes, we were actually influenced by Aerosmith at one point. They always cite Aerosmith. They're good. Don't get me wrong. I've loved them from the day I've heard them. But why Aerosmith? What is so spectacular about this band that everyone is just mesmerized and loves?
I'll give you my opinion.
Okay.
I'll give you my opinion. Most bands that are popular are one-faceted. They have a lead singer that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Or they have a singer that's great.
Yeah.
Think Pearl Jam.
Eddie Vedder.
Yeah. Think Nirvana.
Kurt Cobain.
Right. They have a single element that's great.
Okay.
Bands that are in the stratosphere have at least two elements that are great.
Okay.
Van Halen.
Yeah.
Eddie Van Halen, David Lee Roth.
Right.
I really think Aerosmith has two facets. Steven Tyler has the voice and the performance, and then you have Joe Perry that has, they call him the Riff Master.
Mm-hmm.
His guitar phrases, think of the beginning of Walk This Way.
Yeah.
Think of the beginning of Dream On.
Mm-hmm.
These guitar phrases are as memorable as the songs themselves. The guitar riff is as memorable, even today. Think of Jaded.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember the beginning of Jaded as much as I can remember the, you know, Ma Ma Baby Blue as it explodes into the chorus.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got two forces at work. The problem is, think Van Halen, these two, you know, the unstoppable cannonball and the immovable post. Boom! They're gonna hit.
The toxic twins.
They're gonna blow themselves apart.
Uh-huh.
And luckily, Aerosmith, Van Halen, they pull themselves back together. Want to hear my favorite Aerosmith song?
I do.
It has been from the beginning, from the 1976 album Rocks, Not Lost Child. Don't call it Lost Child. That irritates me.
It's not.
Last Child. Rock School. Steven Tyler's the only guy that can get away with his wardrobe.
You try wearing the stuff Steven Tyler wears and see if they don't commit you.
Looks like a harlequin.
Yeah, he does.
Love it. Aerosmith, right here. We're on show number one. We're trying to get to the point where the band just implodes. In fact, I want to get a little bit past where the band implodes because I brought along some of Joe Perry's solo stuff.
The Joe Perry Project?
That's right. I brought along something from his original solo album, Let the Music Do the Talking. I want to play that. So we got to move. Bottom of the hour.
Let's get this over with.
Bottom of the hour. Hey, go to the website,
yes.
KSLU.org. Look for the Rock School thing on the right-hand side. Click it, and there we are.
Yep.
Episodes, all that kind of good stuff. You're just trying to hustle me along?
I'm just trying to get past the stump because I know you'll probably get me because I'm not that hard to stump.
Okay, since
shout out to WESU, Middletown, Connecticut.
Hello, WESU. Okay, you want to do the email address?
KSLURockSchool@gmail.com. Come on.
Okay, since it's Chad's favorite show here, it's Ann's favorite band, it's his favorite show, I am doing the stump for him.
He always comes up with this stuff.
No, this one's not that difficult.
All right.
It is a two... what do you call it? Two-horned stump here, since I'm going to nail you with it here.
All right.
Number one, what is the name of Aerosmith's plane?
Aero Force One!
Okay, you got that Okay, you
Let's
got
stop
that
there.
One. No. When Aerosmith was trying to buy their first plane in 1977, it was a Convair 240.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Perry and Steven Tyler had their eyes on a specific plane, and their people, the people that were handling them at the time, were looking at the plane and said, no, you don't want to buy this airplane. They were seeing the two pilots. Their name was McCreary and Gray. Okay. They were trading a bottle of Jack Daniels back and forth between each other. And they talked Tyler and Perry out of buying the plane. They said, no, we got to go find another plane. We don't like the looks of this aircraft.
Okay.
They did. They went and bought another plane. Name the rock band that did purchase that plane.
Leonard Skinner.
It was the airplane they crashed in.
Yes, it was.
Yep,
ooh,
that
wow.
was the one. We move forward one. 1977. The band was so popular, they didn't even think they had to put their name on the front cover. In fact, they didn't even feel like they had to put their pictures on the cover. They put a line drawing of themselves on the front cover. The album was called Draw the Line, and this was the first single. 1977, Aerosmith, Rock School. Smith on Rock School. What are you looking up?
I'm trying to think of something.
Yeah. This is where it starts to go wrong, folks. Draw the Line is the album. They were that band of brothers up until this point in time.
Yep.
The drugs started to come in. It was the name Toxic Twins that Cream Magazine began to lay across Steven Tyler and Joe Perry right at this point in time. Anybody remember the movie Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band the Bee Gees?
Mm-hmm.
Yuck. Did you know Aerosmith was in that?
I sure did.
Yeah, it didn't go very well. As a matter of fact, apparently Aerosmith was acting like such jerks. There was a scene where Steven Tyler was supposed to lose a fight to one of the Bee Gees or to, I think, Barry Gibb, I think it was. And he even said, I will not lose a fight to Barry Gibb. We have to rewrite the script. So I take a swing at him and I lose my balance and I fall. That was the change in the script that he had to have.
Hey,
but
Doc, seriously.
It apparently goes bad.
If I were a director of a movie and I wanted you to lose a fight to Barry Gibb, don't you think you'd put up a little bit of a fuss too?
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, apparently.
But, well, there's the
bad. In this era, 1979, Aerosmith puts out its last album as a band of brothers, and it really starts to go bad. In 1979, Night in the Ruts. Everybody get the joke? Ha ha. Night in the Ruts. Right in the, out in Columbia. It was out by Columbia. It went platinum. There was a hit. They redid the Shangri-La's song, Remember Walking in the Sand. They also had kind of a hit called 3 Mile Smile. And you think to yourself, that really doesn't sound like Aerosmith. Well, the reason it doesn't sound like Aerosmith is because by this point in time, Joe's gone.
Yeah.
Perry has said, I've had enough of this. The band is driving me up a tree. He and Tyler are fighting on the road. Apparently, Joe was able to hang on to his drugs. Tyler was doing all of his drugs, and Tyler was stealing Joe's drugs, and the fight was going back and forth. All of the guitar parts were being done by Whitford. Jack Douglas was their producer. He left. Gary Lyons came in. Joe Perry was gone. He was replaced by a guy named Richard Supa. He left. Then another guy named Jimmy Crespo came in. Tyler was now doing so many drugs that he collapses on stage in Portland, Maine.
He did it a couple of times.
Oh, yeah.
That's not the first time.
They finally get him up and get him moving. They take a little break from touring to say, you got to get clean, Steven. Steve says, okay, I'll get clean. Gets on a motorcycle
and
gets in an accident and screws himself up so they can't complete the tour. Columbia says, look, you're still under contract to us. You're going to have to continue touring, but we're going to put out a Greatest Hits LP. That's the one that's red with the Aerosmith logo on the front.
Yep.
It becomes the highest selling Aerosmith album of all time, 11 million. Because of that, most people aren't really sure that there's a problem with Aerosmith.
Mm-hmm. Or they covered it up.
Until Joe Perry's album came out.
The Joe Perry Project.
That's right. Let's play one tune from Night in the Ruts, Once again, everybody get it? Here's a Shangri-La's. Oh, I'm sorry. Aerosmith. Remember Walking in the Sand on Rock School. Get rid of it.
Yeah, you just brought me completely down.
It's not there. Do you hear the riff isn't there? The lead isn't there? The power isn't there?
The it factor is not there.
It's just not there. And I also have 3 Mile Smile. I bought the album. I mean, I owned the album when I was younger and I was a big Aerosmith fan and I had my crate.
Mm-hmm.
You probably don't remember this, but you used to buy crates, these wooden things that you would build and then put all of your albums in.
Mm-hmm.
I had them and it was okay and all these things had changed. And it's not that I understood what was going on. I just knew it wasn't as great.
You can tell. You can hear it. You can hear it in song.
I got 2 more albums to play. Okay. One of them is Joe Perry's Let the Music Do the Talking, and also Rockin' a Hard Place, which has the single Lightning Strikes off it, which is Aerosmith's last album before they all, get back together. And we got to take a break.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get to those last two, but they sort of happen concurrently.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to talk about one guy banging back and forth, Brad Whitford. So take a quick break, come back. We'll sort of try to keep the timeline in order. 1 minute, Rock School. This is Rock School as we talk about Aerosmith. The band is imploded, or beginning to implode, if you will. 4 original members are still left. Joe Perry has split. It's 1979. Joe Perry has taken off. He has put together the Joe Perry Project. You can, by the way, still buy this album. It's still in print. Columbia put it out. You see, Columbia had Aerosmith under contract, and they said, no, Joe Perry, if you want to go out on your own, we are going to hang on to you. So they put out the Joe Perry Project, and according to what I read, now this was not in the Aerosmith autobiography, but according to what I read online, Columbia did their best to thwart the project.
Why?
They said, no. You have to fail at this, Joe Perry, so you'll go back with Aerosmith and you'll continue to make music with them.
That's not nice.
If you look for, he put out 3 albums. I bought 2 of them, as I remember. The first one shows Joe Perry in this white room with a bunch of people that look like they're in corporate headquarters, and he's holding a 2-inch track of tape, sort of like he's presenting his music to them.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let the music do the talking. If you're waiting to hear Joe Perry sing, you won't. The singer is Ralph Moorman. They toured with Huey Lewis and the News.
Oh,
how
boy.
Bad of a pairing is that? So Columbia really didn't try. Now, I talked about one guy sort of working concurrently.
Yeah.
Aerosmith was recording their last album as a foursome called Rock in a Hard Place with Brad Whitford.
But he left too, right?
Right. The moment he finished recording the guitar parts, he split and joined Joe Perry's touring band.
Oh.
So another guy had to come in and replace him. So both guitarists split Aerosmith, both guitarists leave and become the Joe Perry Project. You want to hear Joe Perry?
I guess.
Why not? Let the music do the talking on Rock School.
I think
it has the power.
It has that Aerosmith energy.
It doesn't have the same thing, as
it doesn't have the elements.
Yeah.
It has the energy, the tempo, the speed, and I can definitely hear Joe Perry in that song.
And you can see why Aerosmith is so successful with Steven Tyler and Joe Perry. Joe Perry brings that much to the party. On August 1st, 1982,
yeah.
Rockin' a Hard Place, the last Aerosmith album as a foursome, because Joe Perry's gone, is released. They become a threesome immediately because Whitford splits and he becomes part of the Joe Perry Project. Whitford is replaced by a guy named Rick Dufay, and when Aerosmith is put into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Joe Perry thanks Rick Dufay for committing career suicide for the band.
Wow.
They go out and tour. They put out one single called Lightning Strikes. We'll finish on it. It's not very good. I'll tell you that right up front.
It's a shame that we have to end on such a low note, but keep in mind, next week,
we are
reforming on Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day 1984. Perry and Whitford are off tour. They go. They see Aerosmith perform. They look at each other and they say, we had too much of a good thing. We have to put this band back together. And they go on tour. They call it the Back in the Saddle Tour.
Oh, boy.
And they explode. They just knock it out of the park one more time. A little bit of legal wrangling. We'll tell you about it, but they do it. One more hour of Aerosmith. Back to the top next week. I'm Joe Burns.
I'm Chad P.
Rocking a Hard Place, Lightning Strikes, Aerosmith. Class is dismissed.